This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
And I'm sure you've been wanting to hear that. Hello, everybody, from the Trackon Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago. This is Inside Open Wheel. I'm Jeremy Scott. Charlie Ante joins me in just a little bit. I do want to apologize. We had a lot going on. I had some family matters I had to take care of. Charlie ended up working on a project. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. I had Eric Brennan scheduled to fill in, but tech issues on his end kind of prevented everything from kind of cohesively connecting together. So here we are. We're about several weeks late, but we do have a couple of good guests for you. Matt Clark won 2 out of 3 races and podiumed all 3 times the last time that the F4 championship raced at Road America back in May. I'll have my talk on that in a little bit. We'll go through that with Charlie. Also, the Indianapolis 500. We cannot forget about that. Charlie and I break that down. Also, Jack Crawford, one of America's hopes to get into Formula One, joins us. He talks about his 2 seasons between Euro Formula and FIA F3. So if you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us on our Google voicemail, 815-714-9260. Email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Tweet us at insideopenwheel. Follow us on Facebook. So lots to cover between wrapping up what happened at the Indianapolis 500. We're going to preview the Detroit Grand Prix. It's going to be a big show, so definitely stay tuned for Matt Clark next.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, we'll talk more about the Memorial Day weekend here in just a little bit. Right now, we're going to wrap up the F4 FR America's weekend at Road America. I know I'm a couple weeks late. We know why. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in my thoughts on the F4 FR America's championship. But nonetheless, there was one driver who, I can't remember if I said it out publicly, but I had a feeling he was going to make a mark for himself this season. And he really did take a 2 out of 3 wins, all 3 podiums. The Canadian F1600 champion Matt Clark joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Matt, congratulations. We know that first one didn't count because of the ruling where you have to run, I think, more than 50% of the race under green flag. But you more than made up for it in race number 2.
Yeah, overall, it was a great weekend. First off, I'd just like to say thank you to you, Jeremy, for having me here on the show. And just a wonderful weekend for us as a team, managing at Ganella Racing, their first win in the USF4 series. So we're looking to carry that momentum for the rest of the season.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Ganella Racing, what made you choose Ganella Racing, first of all? Because, you know, it's not a, you know, Jay Howard or it's not a D-Force Racing, but it's still a very competitive team.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, choosing a team is definitely a really big process for a new driver coming into the series, and we kind of looked at everyone in the paddock, and we heard some really, really good things about Ernie and his guys, and we went down actually in late December to test. We did a test. We were really happy. We were immediately really quick at Sebring and Homestead. And from then on, we just kind of knew that they were going to be the perfect fit for us for the 2021 season.
And that wasn't the only series that you were actually looking into. If I remember correctly, you ran the Road to Indy Championship, E-Series Championship, earlier on in the season for a couple of races as well.
Yeah, that was just an overall, like, a really cool experience. I mean, sim racing is relatively new to everyone, so to get the opportunity to do that through Rob Howden and the Road to Indy was just incredible. And I think we show that we have a pretty good, you know, sim pace, but definitely still working on that. And I think sim racing is going to become a really big part and tie into real racing the next few years.
Yeah, I don't disagree, because we're seeing what, you know, NASCAR is doing with this, what IndyCar is doing with this, what the Road to Indy is doing with this. Nonetheless, I think that sim racing is great because we're seeing how drivers like yourself are using this as a platform to, you know, get more followers. We see Connor Daly do this all the time as well.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience to race some of those guys. I think Connor Daly, Spencer Pigot, Peter Dempsey, and a few of their big names were in there on the last invitational race. So it's definitely a really good way to grow your platform. I myself have started streaming more or less for fun, but also to kind of grow my community. So there's a few interesting opportunities there for sure.
All right, Road America a couple of weeks ago, I know it was a bit of a weird weekend because we don't normally have your first two races on Sunday and a third race on Monday. So what kind of a mindset did you have going into that weekend? Because I know Saturday was that first qualifying session.
Yeah, coming off Road Atlanta, it just wasn't really a good weekend for us as a whole, whether that be me or the team and some bad luck, just kind of working on ourselves. And we knew that we were going to be strong for Road America, had to keep our heads up. And we managed to really lay the lap down on Saturday for that pole position. So that kind of set the bar for the weekend. And from there on, we just stayed true to our plan and you know, really just hunkered down, did some hard work, and we managed to pull off two wins and a podium. So big bag of points, and we're looking to bring it on for Mid-Ohio, try to get back in that championship fight right at the top.
Matt Clark joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Yeah, I mean, Road America, like I said, that first race, it was a bit of a wreck fest. Second race, it had the kind of that same feeling at the beginning, but once that first full course yellow got out of the way, it was, you know, smooth sailing from there. So did Scott Goodyear come down and talk, have a special meeting after that first race to tell you guys, hey, calm it down a little bit?
I remember I was sitting in the driver's briefing, and I'd never personally been to Road America. I'd done on the sim. I knew it was a pretty daunting track. You know, one of those tracks that you really have to give respect, like most sport up here, like Tremblant, like Road Atlanta. And he said probably three or four times in the driver's meeting, don't go too wide through the kink. There are certain areas of this racetrack you can not fight through. And yeah. I mean, it was shown. Unfortunately, there was, you know, a few cars with heavy damage in the first two races, but he had a really long chat with us in the second driver's meeting after the second race, I believe it was. And we actually went all the way green for the third race. So I think that was really good. And having someone like Scott, who's obviously extremely experienced in the motorsport industry, is very beneficial for all the drivers.
Yeah, that's been one huge shining spot for F4 and FR Americas the past couple of seasons. And unfortunately, we did see, you know, what this track can do is it sidelined, you know, Nick Persing and Jason Alder earlier on in the weekend for Velocity Racing Development. Yeah, you just don't go too wide in the kink because bad stuff can happen, as we did see early on.
Yeah, for sure. Even, you know, my first laps on the track were, you know, kind of, like I said, daunting. As a driver, I wouldn't use the word fear because that's not really something that I am. Like, I'm not fearful when I drive, but you definitely have to give a track, especially on your first few laps, the first session, an element of respect until you really get comfortable and you start pushing it really hard. So corners like the kink, Canada Corner, even the last turn are incredible turns. And, you know, the circuit's amazing, but you definitely had to give it that level of respect that it needed.
Now, I've never driven that track at speed, but I could hear our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, say, well, the kink's not that bad, as he, you know, because he used to run a pro Mazda at the time there. But, I think, honestly, all the corners that I would give due respect has to be 13 right there. Granted, you used to have the Billy Mitchell Bridge there, but it's still, you know, flat out left-hander going up. And if you get it wrong, you're going to hit that access road.
Yeah, for sure. No, definitely a tricky corner. So I'm actually really glad that the series got to race there because, I mean, it was just a blast all weekend. And I try not to let my results skew my opinion of a track. Road Atlanta was still incredible, but I think I like Road America a little bit more. For me, just a little bit more technical. The draft also played a massive part in it, though, so I think it was kind of like a rolling chess game, which I enjoyed.
Now, you've raced F1600 across the border in Canada, so almost every track you're going to this year is a new track for you. Let's talk about how you prepare for that outside of sim racing, because you can run sim all day, but you don't necessarily get the same elevation changes like you would, say, for example, at Mid-Ohio.
That is 100% true. I'd say actually that's one of the biggest thing is when you go from the sim to actually driving a track in real life. Take Mosport, for example. You know, turn two drops 40 feet. Doesn't quite feel like that in the sim. But, you know, when you first get there, it's a lot of mental prep. Like, you sat on the sim, watching video, making track maps, making notes. So you really got to prepare yourself before you get there. And then, you know, when the time comes, first session is just all about learning. So you already have kind of base ideas on, you know, I call them references, where you're going to brake, where you're going to release the brake, where you're going to turn in, how you're going to apply the throttle. And you kind of know that before you get there. And that's something you learn as you drive for longer and longer. I call it my tool bag. So I've been building my tool bag since I started, you know, when I was 11 years old, when I started karting.
Now talk to
and
us,
you bring it with you.
Oh, sorry. Now talk to us a little bit about the S1600 championship that you raced in. Looks like it's a little bit more competitive than what we see here in the States, but you were still able to clean the floor with the series last year.
Thank you. No, the 1600 program up in Canada is phenomenal. I mean, I think 1600 racing in general is amazing around the world. It really just teaches you mechanical grip and the big transition from karting to cars, because, I mean, instead of having a 300-pound go-kart you can throw around, you're up to over 1,000 pounds, so there's a big difference there. And yeah, the Britain West team last year was just phenomenal. We had a lot of success together, and they're great guys.
And of course, also looking at your website, you also have a fan club, which is something we don't normally see with developmental drivers. So that's a great step in the right direction, too.
Thank you. Yeah, that was kind of something we put together, working with Cosmo Sports, and they're helping me a little bit with my socials, especially my website.
Yeah.
Just in how we're going to go about things. And the MCR Club was kind of an idea that actually my father came up with. And I think it's just a great way to kind of get, you know, everything that's happening with me and my racing career out to the people who are, you know, interested in it.
No, it's a smart idea because, you know, you take a look, it's like a lot of drivers, you know, early on, you know, they come on shows like this or they just post on socials. Well, now you actually have a fan club that can follow you the whole way through.
Yeah, exactly. No, thank you.
Now, what I believe I read somewhere that you're also are you also having James Hinchcliffe help you out a little bit?
Was that yeah, you? So okay. I actually formed a partnership with Speed Group. They're a driver development company, and essentially it's run by three partners. Tony Calderon, who is a manager in kind of the IndyCar scene. David Martinez, who is co-owner of D-Force, I'm sure you know him, yep. And James. And so I get to kind of work with all of them, you know, in different aspects. But James has been helping me, you know, prepare for the racing on the sim and kind of just giving me advice as I go along. So having him has definitely been super helpful for the start of the season.
And that's got to help as well, because you have somebody who's, you know, obviously David Martinez, we know how much of an asset he is. Tony Calderon, for those who don't know, he's deep within the IndyCar scene, so that's another great asset. But, you know, you have James sitting there who knows these tracks quite well and, so you know, helps you out with certain tips. So that's had to have helped this past weekend at Road America.
For sure. I mean, it was really big. We kind of had a chat about, you know, Road America and, you know, some of the features that it has. He actually got his first big car win there, yep. too, so I told yep. him we have something in common now after the racing, and that was kind of nice. But yeah, all three of them have just been a massive help at the start of the season.
No,
and I like to tease David because he's conflicted, because obviously his team's competing in the series as well, yeah. but he's also cheering me on. So we joke about that.
No, that's huge. But nonetheless, congratulations, a successful weekend so far. Where can fans sign up for this Matt Clark Club, and how can fans follow you on social media?
Yeah, so all my tags on social media are _MattClark. I like to keep it simple across the board. And then on my website, mattclarkracing.com, you can sign up for the MCR Club, and you'll get all the news and updates on the 2021 F4 US Series.
Fantastic, Matt Clark. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations. And Mid-Ohio's not too far away, so I guess it's time to start prepping for that.
100%. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Coming up next, Charlie and I go over the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500 next. When getting the real story in the Road to Indy or IndyCar paddocks, more people trust Trackside Online, presented by Honda Racing, than any other site. With the top stories, race previews, and features you won't get anywhere else, it's the place to get news for IndyCar fans like yourself. Just $22 gets you insight and analysis from some of the best writers in the series. Visit TracksideOnline.com today for your subscription. That's TracksideOnline.com.
And the white flag will fly on the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race into turn number one.
If Alex Palou is going to get Elio Castroneves, it's not in turn one. Elio leads. fades into the short chute. Five cars ahead of our leader, a new team and a new life for Elio Castroneves. Ryan Hunter Ray is in front of Elio Castroneves. Two-car length advantage down the back straightaway for the final time.
All kinds of traffic now as they work their way into turn number four. But it's Elio Castroneves behind Ryan Hunter Ray, trying to hold off Alex Palou. Castroneves looking for number four, Chris.
A two-car length advantage. Elio Castroneves trying to become a four-time winner out of turn four.
Off turn four for the final time. Elio Castroneves comes to the start-finish line. Twin checkers out, and then there were four. Elio Castroneves joins the four-time winners club. He wins the 105th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
And those voices you heard were that of Nick Yeoman, Michael Young, Jake Query, Chris Sinieri, and of course, the voice of the Indianapolis 500, Mark James, courtesy of our friends at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Can you believe, Charlie, that was 2 weeks ago?
Wow, yeah. Time flies.
You know, I've got to say this, as that by far was one of the better 500s that we have had in the better part of a decade, because, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, you know, the first half of the race, like we normally see, ho-hum, but really that second half, that was fantastic, even if because people thought, it wasn't that good. You had to really pay attention to see how good that race is, and I think I said it to you after the race. I think the IndyCars finally found the right package for IMS.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, for a race that long, the first half of the race is just setting up for the second half. I would be interested. I mean, maybe we could talk about it, but the changes that they made from last year and the year before, I guess especially last year, because that was the first one that they ran with the aero screen.
Yep.
But do you know what changes they made since last year?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you, but I think they did make a couple of tweaks, because remember that first year in August was the first year they had the aero screen, so they actually were able to take those notes and kind of translate that into this next year and made things a little bit better. It wasn't as much of a draft fest. It reminded me of a late 90s kart race.
Yeah, yeah, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, that was, you know, it wasn't a draft fest. It wasn't, you know, okay, well, I'm going to get out front for a lap or two. Okay, pop out. You know, you did see that, but that was only on fuel save. But you take a look at, you know, first of all, let's just say this. You got to feel bad for Stephen Wilson. First pit stop that he comes in, and he gets on the brakes, and he has no brakes. And that seemed to fit the theme of the day, where at least one pit stop, we had one driver who would lose it in the pits, because a lot of these teams, you know, they push that piston way in so they could get faster, but it hurt several drivers in the end.
Yeah. Do you know enough about the details of what that was? Because I know a little bit about it, but can you shed any light on what the deal is with that?
From what I heard, and this was from a couple drivers who, Stefan included, came out and said, yeah, the team pushed back the piston so there wouldn't be any drag on the brake pad to the brake disc, because they want to get as much speed as they could. Stefan said he you know, tested the brakes, come off four, fine. Second he got on them, he had no brakes, and then, you know, that's when he spun in the wall.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's a new thing that they're doing now, or if they did it last year or the years before. But it does seem like the brakes have sort of become a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
Because I remember, was it last year that James Davison's brakes caught on fire?
Yeah, they caught on fire, what, two laps into the race?
Yeah, and then I think at Texas this year, somebody's brakes caught on fire. I forget whose it was.
It was the Andretti's, because Andretti had one in each race I think it was the right rear that blew, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it caught on fire.
Yeah,
because when your brakes are catching on fire, that's probably something you should look into.
Yeah, so you know, it took out fan favorites Stephen Wilson, Simona DeSylvester. I think Will Power also had some brake issues going into pit lane. Granted, you don't necessarily need them going around the oval, but you kind of need them going into the pits.
Yeah, you definitely need them going into the pits.
I've got to say this. I'm glad that my dark horse came through, because he did win the Rookie of the Year, Scott McLaughlin. But you got to feel for Scott Dixon. Comes in as a favorite, fast all month, pole for the 500, and then gets, you know, he gets screwed on the first pit stop. You know, comes in, you know, takes the emergency fuel, and the car doesn't restart. Alexander.
Yeah, well, Scott's won so much, I don't really feel bad for him.
I mean, here's the thing. Scott, everybody's like, well, you know, Scott should be a multi-time champion. He should, but he's got the... I'm thinking the Andretti luck shifted from the Andretti's to him after he won back in 08, especially after leading over half the race last year and having Sato get him on the final restart.
Yeah, that very well may have happened.
So, also affected is Alexander Rossi, and I'm wondering if he's going to be over in that 22 car next year.
Well, so whenever you refer to cars by their numbers,
okay.
I have no idea what you're
okay.
talking
I'm wondering
about.
If he's going to be in Simon Pagenaud's seat next year.
Over at Penske, maybe.
Because there,
weren't there rumors of him going to Penske recently?
It was
a couple years ago.
Yes, a couple years ago during his last contract negotiation. Of course, then you know he re-signed with Andretti Autosport, but he still did race with Penske and IMSA as an endurance driver for the Acura LMP team.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I could see. I mean, he has had some difficult last couple of years have been pretty difficult for him. I could see him looking for new pastures. Possibly.
I would not. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him. You know. Him and Pagenaud do the team swap like we've seen a couple teams do over the past couple of years. Something else I want to point out. Holy cow. Connor Daly, congratulations, leading the most laps of the race.
Yeah, I was rooting for him. It was that wheel coming off of Graham Rahal's car that really did him in, right? Otherwise, he would have been right up there.
Yeah. If that wheel wouldn't have come off and hit him, I think he would have been there. And, you know, here's the thing, mate. People ask, why didn't they change the front wing? It's not as easy as it used to be. It used to be you take the screws off and just plug and play. But since the death of Justin Wilson, IndyCar mandates that you have to have tethers connected from the wing to the body of the car. So it would have taken a while, but with a full course yellow, I think it may have been feasible to, you know, get it out, send him out on his way, and then come back like we've seen teams do with engine change, with, you know, when they're tweaking on the engine. But here's the thing. I've been saying for years, Connor Daly is woefully underrated. What we saw at Indianapolis proves my point. And he even came out and said, look, when I was in front, I was loose. Can you imagine how well that car would have been if you would have been balanced?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing. But yeah, you got to feel too for Graham Rahal, as we've talked about. You know, the wheel coming off. I don't know if there was a miscue, if there was a wheel nut failure. It surely wasn't a Mercedes Monaco issue. But yeah, that's you just got to feel bad for Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to watch the replay, but I think it was just a simple mistake by the tire changer.
Yeah. And how about Alex Palou as well? Getting up there, staying up near the front. I thought there with the last four or five laps that he was going to challenge Elio for the lead, but obviously we didn't see that happen. And he's our points leader going into Detroit this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the last couple laps, I think Elio sort of got really lucky with the traffic because if there was no traffic there, then he would have been vulnerable to drafting, but if he had caught them a little bit sooner, then he could have been held up by them. So he was just happened to be at the perfect distance to get their draft, so that sort of negated Palou's advantage, and then was also far enough away to not have to be slowed up by them.
Yeah, there's just so many good storylines at this year's Indianapolis 500. I mean, heck, even look at Rinus VK. Look at the turnaround he has made in the past year. He started off his IndyCar career by spinning out and hitting Palou, as we just talked about, at Texas. And now he's a serious contender at all the tracks. It's just an amazing turnaround.
Yep, and one more storyline that may be worth mentioning is I think that this is the biggest sporting event in the country.
Yep.
Since last year.
The biggest sporting event in the world.
in the world. Yeah. And the numbers are still going down. So yeah, things are good.
Yeah. So yeah, that was, I think, one of the best 500s we have seen in years. I'm excited for the rest of the season. I'm just so giddy about the rest of the season. I did want to talk about something else, though. And you sent it to me a while back. I've got to pull this up as my browser decides. Yeah, I'm not going to log in. Hold on a second. Anyway, go ahead and fill some time, Charlie, talking about some other points if you have any.
Riffing right off the top of my head.
I know.
I'm good at rambling, but I'm not good at riffing. I have a guess. Is this the sports marketing guy?
Which sports marketing guy?
There was a guy that wrote a opinion piece on Racer a few weeks ago, and yeah, he wrote a follow up like last week, that was like saying things that racing needs to do to improve the audience.
No, this is something I'm sending it to you on Facebook. This is something that we saw on Reddit. You and I both saw, and it was the Indy. And somebody posted a kind of like a color graphic of the Indy 500 advertising. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So 124 of 200 laps were fully broadcast, 62% of the race. Okay. 76 laps were missed due to advertising, and somebody said the Indy 500 was broadcast as the Indy 310. Pardon me a second, Charlie. You know that one of my side jobs that I work with a broadcast company. So I'm acutely aware of, you know, I'm aware of, okay, well, we've got to pay, you know, the cameraman. We got to have equipment. We've got to do this. I know what goes into a broadcast because I give these numbers to the sanctioning bodies and kind of negotiate, you know, what we can and can't do. What you see in the red pays for a cameraman. It pays for talent. It pays for directors. It pays for equipment. It pays for travel. I would rather see side-by-side commercials, as we did see for most of them, and have top talent than to have no commercials at all, period. None. We're talking none. And hire some Joe Schmo off the street. It's amazing how people, even when it's on free to air, sit and complain that, oh, there's too many commercials. Okay, so you just want me to work for free? Great. Let me go to the power company and say, oh, I can't pay you this month because I worked for free, but I can pay you. I have these fans. I can pay you my fans. Seriously, this is... You got to understand. Yes, it's frustrating to see commercials. I get it. If you don't like it, then go to the race. You're not going to, the only commercials you're going to see are on the sides of the walls or on the cars. But to sit there and complain and say, it's not fair that, you know, I get to see 60% of the race and, oh, it's side by side. Well, that's not the same. Come on now. Get over it. If you don't like it, pay, you know, the money for a free paper for a pay-per-view, or go to the racetrack if it so pisses you off so much. Tired of people complaining.
Well, counterpoint. So I can think of Formula One on ESPN is broadcast without commercials.
Right.
And soccer games around the world are all broadcast without commercials during play, and they managed to have, you know, multi-hundred-million-dollar TV contracts. So it's very possible that they're just, NBC is lazy and they don't want to look for a more viewer-friendly possibilities for generating revenue without interrupting the race with commercials.
I mean, I get it. There's ways to do it, but we are in an age and in a country where obviously the dollar's the almighty king. So if you have, you know, like a mother's policy that says, okay, I'll give you $15 million and we want, you know, X amount of commercials an hour per block. Okay, so say, for example, that number is... If you take a commercial block, which is about 3 minutes or so, depends on what goes on, they'll get, you know, one or two of those 30-second blocks, and so that's what their money goes towards. And yeah, I don't disagree. It could go towards better things, but look, we need to get as much money as we can in the series so that way we can do more free to air. And I didn't hear anybody, you know, anybody bitching about the radio coverage, and I apologize for you for swearing, but it just, as somebody who works in the sport, it really pisses me off when people don't understand that good talent is not cheap and cheap talent is not good.
Yeah.
We see it in F1. I don't know what the announcers are getting paid, but
I'm sure they're getting paid a lot. They're probably getting paid a lot more than the IndyCar commentators.
Well, as I said on my personal Twitter during Azerbaijan, I miss Bob Varsha.
Yeah. Oh, well, but actually, to add some context to that, I'm pretty sure ESPN just uses Sky's feed.
Yeah,
so ESPN's not paying any commentators.
No, they're not. No, I realize that. The only commentator they're paying is at the beginning and the end with Nicole Briscoe, which I would even be happy having her on there. Somebody who actually know who wouldn't be a baffling idiot on the microphone.
I watch all of my F1 stuff on F1 TV, so I wouldn't know anything about that.
Who does the F1 TV coverage?
They cover F1, F2, F3, and Porsche's Super Cup.
Well, what I'm saying is it's not, you know, the Sky commentators, is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh.
And also you can change languages. So they have like Spanish, German, French, unfortunately not Italian. Also, you can just turn off the commentary altogether, which is really cool.
Ooh.
Sorry, I don't know if that offends you or not, but
no, I like it.
Sometimes it's really nice to just shut everyone up and listen to the sounds of the sport.
Well, you know who does the commentary for Finnish, right?
Mika Hakkinen?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
I just paid just to hear Mika Hakkinen speak. I don't care that it's not in English.
Yeah, Finnish is a very entertaining language to listen to, even if you don't understand, probably especially if you don't understand what you're saying.
All right, coming up next, though, on Inside Open Wheel, we stay in the FIA as I sit down with Jack Crawford next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, he's setting the Euro Formula Series on its head so far this year, winning 2 out of 3 races in one round. And looking pretty good in F3 as well. It's Jack Crawford. He's home and heading to Europe here shortly, but we've got a couple of minutes to talk to him. Jack, thanks for joining us here on Inside Open Wheel.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I've got to say this. I know that you're busy running two series because... And you've seen split weekends from F2 and F3. We'll talk about that. But 2 out of 3 wins, 3 podiums in your Euro Formula season so far. And that's not a bad start.
No, it's a pretty okay start to the season, I'd say. In the F3, we had some bad luck in the quali, so we didn't get to really show the results that we had the potential for. But yeah, my first Euro Formula weekend went well. I probably should have taken all 3 wins, but had an incident in the last race. Started the season well in Euro Formula. Just need to recover the F3 after we had a bad start with an unlucky qualifying, which basically set my whole weekend for disaster.
I want to talk about that qualifying because it's kind of similar to what we see here in the road to Indy with qualifying, where, correct me if I'm wrong, you qualify for race one and then your times in race one and race two set the grid for race two and race three.
Yeah, so for the F3, the qualifying format is qualifying for race. Oh, it's actually confusing. So you qualify, and then race one is reverse top 12 of qualifying, and then race two is reverse top 12 of results of race one, and then race three is the one is just based off quali, and that's worth the most points. So it's a bit confusing, but yeah, if you're in the top 12, you're doing well. So,
and you're with you're with a couple of good teams as well in F3, and you're a Formula High Tech in F3. Euro Formula, you have Team Moto Park. I want to talk about F3 real quick, because that was that first weekend at Barcelona. That was some great racing, and I think, you know, we're going to see that more throughout the season, because you're seeing some guys running both F2 and F3, so they have that experience of running with, you know, as support of F1.
Yeah, it was a pretty good race weekend, I'd say, for me, in terms of the races. I was always the quickest race pace in testing, and it showed also in the races in Barcelona. But yeah, I mean, the qualifying set me back. I had made some really good overtakes in the first race. I had gone from 20th to 13th, and I just missed that reverse grid spot by one place, so that was a bit frustrating. And then and in race two, I also made up another five positions or so, up into ninth, four positions. The racing is really good. It's not the easiest to pass, obviously, with all the aero we have, but we passed with the DRS quite easily. But without that, I don't know what we would do. But it helps a lot, and it makes the racing better for sure.
Now what?
And, it's really competitive. So.
And what's that like when you activate the DRS? Because you know you see the wing open up on TV, but what is that feeling like when that wing opens up and gives you more? Gives you that aerodynamic advantage.
Yeah, and when you're testing or just by yourself, and you go one lap without and one lap the next, which, I mean, you wouldn't really do, but you can sort of feel when it opens. The car sort of like sits down on the rear a bit, it feels like. And then in the race, I mean, if you had the DRS and the person in front does, you're like really confident in your overtake, because it's going to be a bit easy since you have like a 10 mile per hour advantage down a straight. So in the race, it's sort of like, you know, like if the guy in front doesn't have it, it's like, oh, you're gonna get him quite easily. It's quite nice to have. I'd say
Jack Crawford joins us on Inside Open Wheel. On to your formula. Now, you had a little bit of a strange start this season because you weren't technically old enough to start on May 1st for the first round of your formula Algarve. You ended up starting the third race, which is your first race of the season, but the next round you took 2 out of 3, and basically it's an All-American winning series so far between you and teammate Cameron Das. Let's talk a little bit about the differences between Euro Formula and F3 real quick, and how you've been able to just take off at the start of the season.
Yeah, so I've been testing both during early 2021, sort of back and forth. They're quite a bit different, the cars. So obviously I've been jumping week to week to a different one, so I have to sort of adapt quickly, because usually you only have one or two practices before the quali. Quite a bit different, the cars. The Euro Formula has quite a lot of downforce and not a lot of power, so you're only going 150 on the straight mile per hour in the Euro Formula, but the corner speeds are so high. It sort of makes up for it. And then the F3 is sort of just a combination of high power and then also that same downforce. There's not as much downforce, but there's just a lot more power, and it's a lot bigger, and heavier, and it's just, you know, a different car to drive. The Euro Formula is a lot lighter, more downforce, less power, and the F3 is heavier, more power, a little bit less downforce. But yeah, overall, the F3 is quicker, mostly in straight line, because you're going probably top speeds 20-30 mile per hour quicker. Which, I mean, I can't really feel, and both speeds feel the same to me, but you can definitely tell the cornering speed is a lot more for the Euro Formula. So.
This year, you get a home race. You're going to be at COTA this year for the FIA F3 in support of the U.S. Grand Prix. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on that. I can imagine that you're pretty excited to actually sleep in your own bed before a race weekend.
Yeah, it's a bit, let's say, weird. I mean, being so close to home, I've never, like, I've, like, raced in karting before, you know, regionally and whatever. But I've never, like, had, like, so, like, all these people I'm racing against, they get to come over to me now, which is a bit, which is a bit weird, I'd say, because I'm always going to Europe. And now they have to come to the U.S. so yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool. I don't get to stay at home because it's 2 hours away. Okay. But I get to stay close to home, so just a quick drive on Sunday night and I'll be back home in my own bed. And then yeah, I mean, the track's really, really cool. I drove on it just a day of testing earlier this year, and it was super, super nice. But yeah, hopefully I can end the season well for my home race.
Let's talk about the start that Red Bull Racing's been having. The team that you are racing with, really off to a good start this season in Formula One. We saw Max Verstappen win at Monaco. Are you really surprised on how well the team has paced themselves throughout the season?
Yeah, it's quite impressive, I say. I think last year they were quite far behind Mercedes. I think Mercedes were ahead of everyone, but yeah, I mean, with some rule changes, they've stepped it up, and now they're the ones to beat. So yeah, I mean, it's nice knowing I have that affiliation as well. I mean, to a could be championship winning team by the end of the year. And yeah, it's nice that hopefully maybe one day I'll be coming up the same team. So
also the Indianapolis 500s, we know we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit, but that was last week. Did you get a chance to watch it, and what do you think about it?
Yeah, I did watch it. It was definitely cool. I've done, like, IndyCar racing and unlike iRacing. Yeah, I mean, it looks easy, but I'm sure it's really not. And yeah, I mean, they're going so quick. It's honestly a bit insane how quick they're going. But yeah, I thought it was a good race. There were a bunch of young guys at the front, and then there was I think the oldest one ended up winning ahead of all those, all the young people. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good race, and yeah, I think it rewards patience. I mean, obviously in F1, you don't have, I guess, that long of a race. I mean, anything could happen in that race. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I thought it was a good race.
And do you see yourself entering the 500 someday?
First I'd like to have a career in Formula One, maybe.
Obviously.
I told my dad that when I was 46, or however old Helio was, that I want to be in the Indy 500. but yeah, I mean, hopefully, and you know, I can have a good F1 career. That's the main goal. Yeah. And then yeah, maybe transition over to America. You know, for like maybe a couple seasons in IndyCar when I'm older, and a little bit less talented. I'd say. But I've always wanted to race in America as well. So yeah, it'd be cool to end my career in my home country as well. So.
Yeah. And you know, you're well on your way to getting an F1 seat. We're really excited watching your progress. Where else can fans take a look at, follow you throughout the season on social media?
Hey, you can follow me on Instagram at Jack Crawford Racing. That's my main platform. And then also on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Sounds good. Jack Crawford, thanks for joining us, and good luck the rest of the season. We'll chat with you before your home race.
All right, thank you.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we discuss more of the Indianapolis 500.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Oh, you're going to get two episodes close together this week and next week. That's because next week's a busy week for both Charlie and I. So what we're going to do, we'll preview Road America and we'll preview Pit Race. However, this weekend, we're going to kind of go through Detroit, but let's talk about our news a little bit after that. Detroit this weekend, just going to have the IndyCar and Indy Lights. Almost said Formula Indy. Jesus Christ. All right. IndyCar, Indy Lights returns for the first time in a decade. And I think, Charlie, this is the first time they're using the longer straight between 2 and 3. But regardless, this is the first time that the current Dallara chassis for Indy Lights gets to see the track. So remember when we talked about St. Petersburg and how Linus Lundqvist, you know, the rookies are not going to do so well. Everybody's in a level playing field. So this race, I think, is only going to help the HMD boys of Malukas and Lundqvist because, and I say HMD because GRG's with HMD, but I'll tell you what, it's going to be a fun weekend regardless because Indy Lights on a street course is just fantastic.
Yes. What just caught my attention with what was that comment you made, said about the straightaway between 2 and 3?
This is the first time I'm gonna double check it, but I believe this is the first time that the Indy Lights cars at the Indy Lights drivers have seen the long straight between 2 and 3. Because remember, halfway in that straight, they would take that right by the trees.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't catch that you were talking about solely Indy Lights. I was like, what are you talking about? They've been doing this for years.
Oh, yeah, I know they've been doing it for years.
Yeah, no, okay, so that makes more sense. Yes.
Yeah, makes a lot more sense.
When was the last time Indy Lights came to Detroit?
It was 10 years ago, so it was 20. I'm pulling up records. Give me 1 second. Oh, let's see if the Belle Isle. Oh, my God, they have the Rolex Sport. I forgot Rolex ran. That's right, they did. The last time Indy Lights ran at Belle Isle was 2012. The winner there was Gustavo Yakimin. Okay. Mm-hmm. Before that, they didn't run between 2001 and 2011. Who won the 2000 race? I doubt you'll get this one because this name, I'm like, holy cow.
I have the Auto Course yearbook sitting next to my toilet right now, and I can't get it because I have to take my headset off. I don't know.
Johnny Kane. I say that
I don't know that name.
Okay. Before that, Derek Higgins, Ayrton Dare, some Brazilian named Tony Kanaan won in 96, 97. Wonder what happened.
Never heard of that
guy. Wonder what happened to him. Robbie Buell in 1995. Here's interesting, though. Okay, 1983, they ran the Grand Prix circuit with F1. The winner was none other than Jose Le Garza.
Hmm.
Wow, that's cool. Let's see. Okay, so yeah, Indy Lights have not been on the quote unquote GP circuit. This will be the first time because hold on a second. Yeah, so the last time the Indy Lights was there, they were doing the shorter circuit. This time they will have the longer circuit because they don't even have a track record for that.
Mm-hmm.
The track record for IndyCar, though, is a 74.2 out of Joseph Newgarden. So faster than Juan Montoya's kart record of a 75.7.
Is that seconds or miles per hour?
Seconds.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just... So it's a minute 14 for Newgarden on the Indy cars. It's going to be interesting, too, because the Indianapolis 500 winner will not be running in Detroit. He'll be going to Stratford Speedway in Connecticut to run the SRX series, which, by the way, that's going to be on CBS on Saturday night. I cannot wait for a racing return on CBS.
I don't really...
You don't get CBS.
Follow the... different broadcast. But so this brings up a question. When was the last time that an Indy 500 winner did not participate in the next IndyCar race?
That would be Dan Weldon in 2011.
Oh, well, it wasn't that long ago.
No. Before that was, I believe, Elio in 2001. I'll have to dig through my records. But yeah, Dan Weldon in 2011 was the last one to...
So he didn't have a full-time ride that year?
Correct.
Is that right? Okay.
Correct. He, at the time, only had a one-off deal, and then Kentucky and the race that we won't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But
right, and it was a big deal because he was going back to Andretti for 2012.
Correct.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes. So, Belle Isle going to be a single header this weekend, the first time since 2019 that the NTT IndyCar Series has been there, because obviously there was no race due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They'll share the track with the IMSA WeatherTech Series as well as Indy Lights. I can't remember who else is running with them, but they are going to run to limited capacity. They're excited because it's the first race that's going to be maskless, but everybody's outdoors, so...
Well, everyone's outdoors for all of these races, I guess.
Yeah, well, say if they're indoors for the race, I'd like to see that.
I guess they could run. They could try to. It would be interesting to see IndyCars run at the Chili Bowl. I'm sure Robin Miller would love that.
Oh, he would. I would. I'd be there. You kidding me?
I was gonna say something, but I forgot what it was.
Don't you love when that happens? Wikipedia goes all the way back to 1905 for what they consider the Detroit Grand Prix. Interesting. All right, let's see here. Let's see if I can get point standings from the NTT IndyCar Series. Oh, come on. You know, you got to scroll through. There we go. That's 2020. Apparently, I got to the IndyCar's website. Let's see here. Indy Pro. They hit the track at Road America here in a couple weeks, which I'm actually really excited about Road America, because I got to go there. This is the first time in years that I have been there twice in a year.
You went up there for, what was the other thing?
For the F4 FR Americas race. We'll talk about that in a second.
Right.
Alex Palou leads the championship with 248 points. Even with Scott Dixon's misfortunes, he's still second with 212. Pat O'Ward in third with 211. Simon Pagenaud, fourth with 201. Rinus VK, fifth with 191 points. Joseph Newgarden, sixth, 184. Colton Herta, seventh with 154. That's another driver that I'm surprised didn't do so hot at the Indianapolis 500. I was expecting him to be the winner, but you know he'll win one. Graham Murray Hall, eighth. Scott McLaughlin, your rookie of the year leader, and he's going to be the winner, people. Unless Jimmy Johnson and Romain Grosjean suddenly decide they're going to run the rest of the season and keep Scott McLaughlin in a closet. There's your rookie of the year winner. Which, by the way, there is some news on Grosjean.
Credit to Scott McLaughlin. He's the only rookie that has had the cojones to run the full season.
Look, I know you were out of New York for a little bit, but come on, man. Marcus Ericsson rounds out your top 10. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend. Then they take their cars and go straight over to Elkhart Lake. We'll preview that next week. The news that I have... Romain Grosjean will be running an oval this year. He did confirm to AP's Jenna Fryer that he will be running Gateway later on this season.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Now, he might be running two ovals this year, which will both be a gateway because IndyCar is yet to decide whether or not Mid-Ohio, a doubleheader at Mid-Ohio or a doubleheader at Gateway will replace the now missing round at Toronto. So that there could be either those two races or they may not run. They just may leave that slot empty. Hopefully we'll see teams go to Canada next year, but I think I saw that Trudeau's talking about maybe opening up the border to vaccinated Americans.
I haven't seen that, but I'm sure it is. But I think it's even if he opened it up today, it would be too late to put the race together, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. That's about the news that we have out of the world of, I forgot results from FRP. Where are you? I gotta pull you. I actually gotta pull you up out of race monitor. Also, the June sprints were last weekend, so a lot of interesting racing there. Let's talk about the F4 FR Americas race that I went to. It was great to see everybody. First of all, great to actually meet a lot of the drivers, meet a lot of the teams. It was cold because May in Wisconsin is winter. I don't get it, but nonetheless, nice to have a little day trip up there. It's a shame that we couldn't be there for the actual racing. Got to see some practice, got to see some qualifying. And it's a great little series. They're both great series. I wish that they got more coverage than they did. That's why we're trying to do what we do here. They did also confirm that Mid-Ohio is going to replace the FR Americas round at Grand Prix de Trois-Rivières. So hopefully Three Rivers is on the schedule for next year and these FR Americas drivers get a chance to run on a street course because those cars would be fun on a street course, I feel.
Mm-hmm. I think the Pro Mazda that I drove kind of slots in between the two.
Yeah.
We raced up at Trois-Rivières. I didn't really have much good luck there, but it was fun to practice on the track. I wouldn't really know what it's like to race there because I never made it past the first corner.
Never made it past the first corner. Seems to be a theme here with you in street courses.
Well, no, just that one.
All right, F1600 at Barber, Jonathan Lee, Hugh Esterson, and Dexter Zuba, your top three there. Race number two, of course, Barber was run with HSR. Nick DiOrlando, Jonathan Lee, and Axe Kachmetz were your top three in that race. DiOrlando, Brienza, and Kachmetz were your top three there in race number three. Of course, I got to take a look at the standings as well. I should have just done that in the first place. DiOrlando right now with at least one drop is your points leader with Jonathan Lee, Will Holtz, Kachmetz, and Kyle Burton, your top three. As we move on to the 2000. Where are you? There you are. Standings. Point standings, and in case you're wondering, yes, I am doing this live. Brandon Dixon with a win. He and Trent Walkle also takes race number two. So Dixon ahead of Walkle, 189 to 178 points. Austin Hill close by in third with 174. Bob Wright, 163 points. Dexter Zuba running both series at Barber sits in fifth place. Over to Atlantics, and I'm hearing that there's not going to be that many at Pit Race, which is a shame, but we're going to try and get some more numbers out there for you. In the open spec, Dudley Fleck with a win in race two. Richard Zober race one, though Dudley Fleck leads Zober by 188 to 158. Austin Hill leads in the restricted spec. He did not win a race because Bob Corliss took the two races. He has only 144 points. As we take a look real quick into the Eastern Pro 4 Challenge, they're light on numbers, but it's a newer series, so I'm not too surprised that that they are a little behind. I saw the points. I saw the points here, and Christian Weir takes the points lead with two wins, 192 to Hayden Bowlesby, 152. Now, it's also going to be a lighter Eastern Pro 4 class at Pit Race because we know points leader Christian Weir is going to be running Radical Cup. Oh, by the way, I'm announcing Radical Cup at Road America Guess who's back? Jay Scott's back. Back again. Tell your friends. Oh, come on.
Well, you know, if broadcasting doesn't work out, then you might have a career as a as a hip-hop artist. Or you could start an Eminem cover band.
I could start an Eminem cover band. I mean, I burn more than I tan, so that should say something. No, I'm really excited because this is something I've been working to get back into motorsports announcing. Those who most who listen to me probably don't know that that's what I specialized in. I once the merge between Grand Am, I should say the takeover of Grand Am from IMSA happened. I was unfortunately one of the ones left out in the cold, but I've been tolling around with track announcing. I will be announcing the live stream and the trackside coverage. We will have it on YouTube, and I think it's going to be on the Radical Cup website as well. So I'll tweet that out on at Inside Open Wheel for that, but I'm really excited. This is something I've been working for a long time, and it's not the last time you're going to hear from me because we're working on a couple of cool things with a company I've been working with. But regardless, we're going to have a Road America preview. We're also going to pit race preview the way that we've been intending to do so over the past couple of years, Charlie.
Yeah, with me as a participant.
Yes, we can finally use driver analyst as a proper driver analyst about damn time.
Well, it's like I said, you got what you pay for.
Yeah, well, I don't pay for much. By the way, we also have a Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series race next week too.
Oh yeah, ironically, I'm actually going to have to miss that because I got to fly home to help prep the car.
Oh yeah, weren't you prepping last week? I mean, come on, what the heck were you doing there?
No, last week I was there for a wedding. So
oh, that's
just,
right.
Just drinking.
I was gonna say, yeah, you're probably drunk when I called.
Yep. Yeah.
I had a feeling. I called Charlie because I wanted to talk to him about something that was behind the wheel. He's like, I had a wedding. I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm at a wedding. But of course, it was very loud too. So
yeah. So yeah, I heard that. All right, let's go over the standings for the Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. Andrea Saik, your points leader so far with a I almost gave the laps. Whoops. 379.48 back is Adam Blocker, Phil Kraus. Tied for second. Fourth goes to Andrew Kinsella. Fifth, Henry Bennett. He's tied with Ray Kingsbury. Tanner Watkins in seventh. Tanner had a busy weekend over the Indianapolis 500 weekend as he was press for the PR officer for the for Lucas Oil Raceway over there for the Carbonite Classic. So I'll have to talk with him on how that went. Chris Demerit, Riley Thompson, Chris Stover round out your top 10. And falling further from his 28th spot will be Charlie Hanty.
Oh, boy. Oh, well, so much for those top 20s.
Well, you know, maybe if you actually win a race.
Oh, man, I wouldn't even begin to imagine such a thing.
Oh, I know. It's a lot to ask for. But nonetheless, it's been, you know, like I said, I want to apologize for the past couple of weeks. You know, family matters, you can't help. Drivers going to weddings, you really don't want to help that. And tech issues, as we all know, it's they're there. So, I mean, it happens. But we'll bring you an earlier show next week because I know I'll be on the road early. Charlie's going to be on the road early. And nonetheless, coming up on next week's program, we preview the races at Road America and Pit Race. Also, take a look at the Elkhart Lake Grand Prix with Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. So for Matt Clark, Jack Crawford, our driver analyst, Charlie Hanty, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. Oh, the next Coca-Cola of Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series round is actually on Tuesday. So hop on their Facebook page to find out more. And special thanks to the IMS Radio Network for the final lap of the 2021 Indianapolis 500. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.